Randy Weston on piano and Talib Kibwe on alto sax, teaming up and with this haunting song, beautiful, beautiful but haunting, and it stays in your heart. Once you've heard it, you can't stop going back to it time and again. This is called JK Blues. It was a collaboration recorded in 1993. Collaboration, incidentally, that also involved Melba Liston, the great trombonist and arranger. She also added her two cents to this wonderful and haunting memory of a song. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And all week long, there's a sense of foreboding. I don't mean to be a wet towel on a Monday when people need all the boosting that they can get. But so many things are happening. They make no sense. And it's as if the ball has started rolling. The proverbial ball rolling. Where to, we don't know. We hope not in the direction of disaster. But that's usually the case when the ball starts rolling. It rolls in the direction of disaster. But yet we saw some glimmers of hope. And even so, as glimmers of hope, they were attached to turmoil and chaos and disaster. I'm referring to the strike that's now on, the strike by auto workers who decided that they're not playing games anymore. They had been in negotiations with General Motors for quite some time, and they thought that they were making progress, and then it looked like GM started rolling away from the table in so many ways. So now 49,000 workers are on strike. And the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. The Teamsters Union has joined them in solidarity. They refuse now to transport any General Motors vehicles or products to distribution centers and sales centers and the like. So that has come to a halt as well. And that's what I was referring to when I said that, it was a kind of dim weekend. But for me, this was a glimmer of hope. This was a bright spot. I know, it sounds odd to say a thing like that. But you know, the American worker has taken it on the chin for a long time. This is the first time in more than a decade you've seen this kind of action on the part of auto workers. And it represents a bold step. Because people have gone soft. They have a little trouble, and the corporation or company they work for puts on the Trump moves of, you know, threatening. You're going to lose your jobs. We're going to cut out this entire part of the company. Those jobs would be gone. You don't come to the table and accept wholesale what we are offering. Then you see what's before you. It's calamity. And still, I have to say, I was very encouraged. Encouraged. It's a very strange, really, in the midst of all of this sadness, that the workers were resolute and that we see the beginnings of solidarity. We haven't seen that in a while. So we will see where it goes. It's been a very encouraging sign. Because in this age of Trump, there's a lot of weakness. Workers are weak. They're giving in. And without much of a fight. I mean, across the board. Not just auto workers, but across the board. And that is because a fear has seeped into the hearts and minds of workers. They're afraid. They've reached a point where they have fallen for the sales pitch. We would like to negotiate with you, but understand how we interpret the word negotiation. You accept what is given. You accept all that is given without a fight. And we will not tolerate. We are prepared. If we have to shut down entire divisions, we are prepared to do that because we are not going to allow you to tell us how to run our business. We are not afraid of you. The law is on our side. This president is on our side. And frankly, you have no choice. The world of employment is not as prolific as it used to be. If you were to leave today, you can't get a similar job tomorrow. So why don't you play ball? Why don't you just calm down? We believe that the terms that we are presenting to you are very generous. And it just takes a little patience. We understand that you may have some trouble with some things in this tentative contract. But stick with it. And you'll see. We have your best interests at heart. And it will all work out much better for you in the end. Well, that was what buoyed my spirits over the weekend. That the workers did not change their minds. They set a deadline. It was firm. They were very clear about the terms that they were willing to discuss further. But they were also clear about things that they were no longer going to discuss. And it was not their responsibility. Things are not supposed to fall on their shoulders. They gave the company a deadline. You either accept or reject our offer. But we're not playing this footsie game anymore. And they were very exacting, which is the way labor unions should be. And when GM blew the deadline, thinking, well, they have them by the scruffs of their necks. These people are just playing. When 49,000 people said goodbye, call us when you come to your senses. We're out. And then the Brotherhood of Teamsters said, we stand with our brothers and sisters at GM. We are not transporting anything on our trucks that says GM. No new cars, no car parts, nothing is moving on our trucks. We stand with them. Until you have the sense and the leadership to come to the table, we will stand with them and we will support them. That was remarkable. Remarkable. And I say that as a one-time union person myself. I was always depressed, almost always depressed, I should say, about the lack of guts that unions seemed to have when they had just about everything that they needed to press the point. In this instance, for example, there has been no strike in the industry, in the automobile industry, for more than a decade. I think even almost two decades now, which is remarkable. Because so many things literally begged for worker action, but there was no action. And so it set the tone, in a way, of for the companies as to what they can do, how far they can go, how hard they can press, hanging jobs over workers' heads. And the workers, it's understandable because this happens every time there is a strike, every time there is a work action. They start applying the pressure. And in this case, it was clear they had the backing of Donald Trump. This is his kind of move. Yes, show them some discipline. Show them that they cannot be unruly. They cannot make these outlandish demands. Let them go to China and make those demands. Let them go someplace else and act as if this is a communist country. But again, we have to look at the resoluteness of the workers' actions. And in whatever way we can, support them. Support them. Because it may not be immediately apparent at the moment, but it's a test case. It's a watershed case in the sense that, again, we've had no such action in the industry for a long time. This president intends by every means necessary to demonstrate to the people he's not playing games, and he likes the idea of supporting the captains of industry. He doesn't care what the issues are. He hasn't volunteered somebody from his administration to try and bring both sides together. Now, that's what a leader does. We know that strikes start off this way. People have to take their positions early, and they have to be adamant about them. But that isn't the way it is throughout. If you study these kinds of strikes, you see there comes a point when both sides are looking for reasonable leadership to intervene and to help sort things out. This administration has no intention of doing anything like that. It has no leadership in that regard. And if it does exercise its power, it is one-sided. It will never side with the workers. Never. So we'll see. Bear in mind, it's a test case. The first in a very long time. But we can see that in only a few days that the workers are showing great strength, great power, and the sector itself is responding appropriately. That is good for America. Because people are fed up. They're fed up with this mentality. They're pushing and pushing and pushing workers and taking more benefits away and delaying their benefits in some cases and just getting away with stuff that would not have been tolerated in the 40s and 50s. But the leadership, and we can't avoid it, we have to note that, the leadership in this industry started to, you know, quiver, started to cave in, which means that their workers could not trust. They had less and less faith in their leadership because they felt that the leadership, in most cases, was siding with the corporations and not with them. And if there were any negotiations, it would be about, well, how much could you stand to give up? Rather than, do you understand you're not giving up? That's what this negotiation spirit ought to be. So in the midst of my doldrums, this was for me a very bright spot. And I'm hoping that it continues to gain traction and momentum because it very possibly might be a signal to the union leaders across all industries that the time has come to stop capitulating to this administration and that they should begin to prepare for some hard-boiled labor negotiations and to hunker down with their memberships. Start preparing now. Well, okay, I've had my say on the subject. So Trump, as you know, he's been salivating over his own little tiny war. He wants a war with his name on it. That would make him a historical figure, the Trump War. And would you know, he got one. He found a war in a Saudi Arabian oil field. Saudi Arabia has gotten so much from this country for so little, and in some cases for free, that while it has its problems with its neighbors, all producing neighbors as well, it always seems to operate on the premise that it will automatically get help from the United States. And the conduct of the United States has made it something of a self-fulfilling prophecy. Whenever Saudi Arabia is in trouble, no matter what the trouble is, no matter whether Saudi Arabia is right or wrong, the U.S. will come running with its planes and its bombs and its tanks and its soldiers, and they will put down the adversary, the enemy. This is what's happening now. President Trump delighted in saying that he was, quote, locked and loaded and ready to back up Saudi Arabia's expected military response to the blistering drone attacks this past Saturday on the kingdom's oil fields, which also happened to produce 5% of the world's oil supply. Now, that's a big deal on many levels. This oil issue has been the epicenter of wars and grievances and fighting in that part of the world. And interestingly, they look to the United States and all these mothers, sons, and now daughters to come die in the desert while the two sides fight it out. Not that the United States gets unusual benefit from any of this. They still have charges and accrue to the United States as far as the Middle Eastern countries are concerned. They're just happy for the help and happy that you're sending your sons and daughters to die for their quarrels, which they haven't figured out how to solve. It is always a fight. An upstart group wants to take on the big boys. Or you have two even-weighted combatants taking on each other. But somehow this country, the United States, is always involved. How does that happen with such alarming regularity and precision? Well, people say, well, if they fight and we have no part in this fight, we lose automatically because we have no way of persuading either side to come to terms. Meanwhile, our economy, our nation, is heavily dependent on oil from this region. And it would be stupid to stay out of the fight. So now Trump is deciding he's not interested in diplomacy at this point. He is locked, as he says, locked and loaded. You know, an American trivial way of expressing himself. Like he's watched too many movies. He's locked and loaded. Well, okay, you're locked and loaded. Are your children locked and loaded? He presumes everybody else's children are locked and loaded and ready for a war. But I'm a little puzzled, you see, because I was told some time ago that there are rules of war. You have to do some things. People don't necessarily have to obey the rules, and many times they don't. They just start a war because they calculate that they have the arms, they have the personnel, they have the boots on the ground, as they say, they have the wherewithal to start a fight and then win it. they'll take a little time, sometimes longer than anticipated, but they're confident that they don't have to negotiate, they don't have to go to any further authority, they can take care of business themselves. Which is part of the reason we have so many unfinished wars in this world. Nobody's obeying rules. There are rules of war. When the president declared that he was locked and loaded, he clearly understood that you understood and I understood that the country is ready. The country is locked and loaded to engage in his war. And I'm waiting. I thought somebody would say something, as in, you may be, you know, the top guy on the totem pole in terms of military command, but we have a process here. You don't just get up and say, well, you're ready for war. Whether you mean it as a stunt or you mean it really, there's a way, there are laws. You're the commander in chief and you're the first one breaking the rules and being allowed to. I'm locked and loaded. He speaks for all of us when he says this. We are locked and loaded. Our response should be, go lock and load yourself. We need to understand what this is about. You just don't decide by yourself. Well, of course, he owns the country, and for that matter, he owns the world. This is his thinking. There's no need to consult. There's no need to come to the people and make an explanation, a report. This happened when? Saturday. And Sunday, he's locked and loaded. Well, in a manner of speaking, he is locked and loaded. He's been locked and loaded for many years, and he's gotten away with it. But you see, the stakes are very high. And when people automatically dismiss their obligation to tell, you know, you ordinary people out there, you silly people out there, you don't know anything about war. In fact, you have no say. I am the one who decides. Will his children be going? Will they be locked and loaded and going to war? I don't think a guy who got heel spurs to use as his reason for not signing into the military when he should have is locked and loaded for war all of a sudden. He means other people's children, other people, you silly little people out there. You just do what I say. I say we're locked and loaded for war. Now, it may come to a situation where there is a huge crisis, that the relationship between Saudi Arabia and other Middle Eastern countries is such that they've been looking forward to war for a long time, because it would settle so many unresolved matters, like the accumulation of additional land and resources from other people. And, you know, basically decimating undesirable populations. There's a lot to be accomplished in the cause of war and have nothing to do with the actual cause of war. But our president was alarming, because this is not immediately, this is not something that involves the United States. You have two people, two nations at loggerheads. He jumps in as an uninvited third party and then announces immediately he can take over the whole situation and be in charge of everything because he's locked and loaded. Your sons and daughters are the ones who will be dying in the sand. And here, in a country that says it's so faithful to the Constitution, with no direct threat, no immediate threat to the United States, the chief of state, the head of state, and the commander-in-chief is openly talking about he's locked and loaded. He's ready to go for war. And life goes on. No, nobody loses their lunch. Nobody throws up their breakfast. And here we are. It's Monday. And supposedly things are, quote, normal, unquote. That must mean that our commander-in-chief is, he knows what he's talking about. He could scare half the world to death into submission. No, it means that the people of the United States have to consider carefully and immediately that we have somebody out of control. And it is not so to surprise us that he would do something erratic, crazy, completely uncalled for. Again, I'm not saying that there should be no wars ever. That's unrealistic. We know how countries behave because they're led by people who do unscrupulous things and far exceed the boundaries of their power. But in this situation, as grave as it is, there was no direct threat to the United States, although I'm sure Trump will argue that this is a key source of our oil supply. And in that situation, in that case, even though the argument principally is between other countries, since it potentially could harm the United States in such a devastating way by having a main source of its oil supply cut off because of this war, that it justifies the U.S. being immediately involved to protect U.S. interests. Now, that's an old feeble argument. It's an old feeble argument. But here again, we see the lack of leadership. And it also adds to the lack of trust around the world. This country has an appetite for war that is almost unequaled in our time. At the drop of a hat, not only is the United States ready, you know, articulating the verbiage to the world, we're ready to kill everybody, when in fact you're scared that you're not prepared to lose a valuable asset, which is a supply of oil, a dependable supply of oil. And you therefore see any attack on Saudi Arabia as being an attack on the United States because the U.S. interests are now imperiled. So it must act to defend itself. That's the argument that they'll make. And it would make perfect sense to a lot of people all around the world. But it doesn't make sense when you look at it. Because to make sense, you would have to dismiss history. You will have to lose faith in your capacity to influence things on the world level, like, you know, you used to be able to do. Because people so respected this country and the leadership of this country. But when you have a kleptocracy in the making, and people are looking to see how to basically garner more and more of whatever it is they're interested in, because there is the financial future. If you don't enter the war, then you give Saudi Arabia, you give everybody. This is their thinking. It is not the truth, but this is their thinking. People will say, well, the United States can't be depended on any longer to defend us, even though we play such a strategic role in their day-to-day survival with our resources. So those two things I've thought about over the weekend, and I said, my goodness, what is happening all over the world? I'll come back after this break and finish up some thoughts. I usually now end up with so much to talk about that I have to cull my list, do some severe culling. And by the time we come back, we could start a conversation around what I have already said. 888-874-4888. I'll be happy to take your calls. We'll break now and then come back. Listening to Lead Stories on your favorite station, PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and I'm one of the fantastic people here at the station, trying every day to bring you information that we hope you find useful and relevant to your lives. Well, Ernie from New York, you start us off today.
Hello, can you hear me, Eutrice?
Yes, I can.
Yeah. Okay, I have a quick comment because I have to go. I was watching, I think this thing that happened in Saudi Arabia was early Saturday morning.
Yes.
Well, it was Saturday already in Saudi Arabia, but over here it was just becoming day. And I was concerned, you know, wondering why the news media wasn't covering it. I mean, I'm talking about like Google News, New York Times. They were not covering, nothing was being said. And I was like, wow, this is big news because you got large refinery. And it took like a day or so. And what I noticed is that New York Times and some of the other newspapers brought up, like they wait, I think what happened is they wait to see what the other news media is going to say. Yeah, I'm not an expert in journalism, but I noticed something strange that as soon as the New York Times and newspapers start taking positions on how to state what they're going to state, then everybody else came out. And then Google News came out with the Fox News and commenting on what Trump said and repeating what he said and all of a sudden now Trump, the administration, what they're saying is valid. You know, the usual thing is what they're commenting is valid, and they're going to move on to war. I definitely noticed how the news media works and how it reacts, because on Saturday, I was wondering why everybody was quiet. 1010 News was not saying anything. I think CNN was the only one that came out. Guardian News did say something about it. But the other big news, Washington Post, the New York Times, the front page news in the New York Times was about the cathedral burning and the release of lead throughout Paris. That was on the front page of the online paper. But that was just my comment I wanted to say.
Well, it's a very interesting observation that you're making. What do you think accounts for it? What do you think is happening while you are not knowing what is happening?
Why I'm not? I believe they're waiting to see first how the news is going to be handled and what they're going to put out to the people in general, so they can move in a certain direction. From what I understand, these were drones that were fired or took off from Yemeni, and they used drones for the attacks. And I noticed that I think it was the Fox News, one of them actually saying missiles came from Iran. I mean, that's the missiles came from Iran, and that they have proof. A satellite proof of that. Utrecht, thanks. I just wanted to comment on that. Thanks for
your call. You're dashing away. Thanks a lot, Ernie, for your call. Thank you. Ma'at, you're on the air.
Yes, greetings to the beloved family.
Thank you.
I want to share aligned with some of your comments. I heard Representative Nadler chairs the Judiciary Committee, New York and Brooklyn, make the point that Congress can only authorize war. Although after September 11th, 01, that seemed to have gone by the wayside, so that needs to be shored up. And also saying that unless there's an imminent threat to the U.S., so that misaligns with the idea that Trump and his pals in Saudi Arabia need to be defended in some way. The Houthi, in Syria, claimed that they were responsible for the hit on the refinery. And, of course, Pompeo and his sidekick Trump is saying that it's Iran. So we're always in a pickle with this, whatever you want to call him. His senior people called him idiot, stupid, fool, etc. So I think one of the questions we need to deal with is how did we get here? Because we mainly avoid certain crises, and we might, as you seem to illustrate in your commentary, we might be coming up on the crises that up until now we very luckily avoided.
Well, the thing is, we don't know what happened, except we can see huge pillars of fire. That we can see. There's no question that the oil fields were attacked. We don't know the agency, although they're saying it's through these, what's the word I'm looking for? Not the missiles, but the drones.
And it's also missiles now that they're saying. First it was a drone,
well,
now it's missile. And it was a refinery, by the way, a big refinery.
Right. We don't have any idea, which is what gives all the parties, the major parties involved, the room to say whatever they want to say and have it accepted as the truth. We don't know. We don't know whether these missiles or drones or grenades or whatever it is, we don't know what caused this conflagration. But we do know, and this is why I say it's very important to hold on to your common sense. We do know our president does not have a record of stating the truth. His administration lies routinely. And we don't know whether the sole purpose of this is to support Saudi Arabia or to obey the laws. We should be looking at how the United States is behaving. It is not behaving so far as a country of laws. It's not involved directly. That doesn't mean it shouldn't be involved if it is an ally of Saudi Arabia. I could understand that. But we don't know. We know that it would be helpful and useful to our president here in the United States to talk like a cowboy. I'm locked and loaded. I'm ready to kick some butt. That kind of childish devolution of a very serious matter. That's not what we want to hear from our main leader in this country. Not at this time. We haven't heard from Congress. We haven't heard from a whole bunch of people we should be hearing from by now. This happened Saturday. This is Monday. As a country blessed with all kinds and levels of intelligence, we should have something that gets us. But I looked at the way the newspapers reported it, and Ernie is right. There was a, it seemed as if the main points were suggested. This is how you, this is what you present as the story so far. They all did the same thing. And they're still doing the same thing. And we should still be doing what you just did, which is keep your own mind. Something is happening. We don't yet know what. We could surmise, we could, you know, theorize, but we wouldn't have a definitive answer just yet. We have to wait and see. Thanks, Matt, for bringing us some new thoughts today that we should take into consideration. Thank you. Julie from North Carolina, you're on the air.
Yes. Hello, Yatrice, and hello to
hello.
The Lead Stories family. I haven't called in a long time, and I'm usually in New York, but this week I'm in Raleigh. And I also have not been able to listen for the last month or so, so I'm not sure who's been calling in. I've run into Allie out in the street, so I know she's been busy, and we're out there, so I don't know what's going on. But in response to your first topic this morning, that you were encouraged by the strike in Detroit.
The strike against GM. Yes.
Well, right. Yeah. Yeah. I said that, but I think I do watch Democracy Now in the morning because that's before I get out. And the pictures, I mean, one of the pictures was in Detroit. And so I had that on my mind. And I felt encouraged by that as well. In addition to what I've been doing since I was in the embassy earlier this year. And I'm not naive enough to think that this had anything to do with John Bolton, but my last night in Washington when we left the embassy was out in front of his house. I went out with Code Pink to protest, and that's not the first time they had been out there, and we would have gone again, but of course now he's been fired, so we don't have to do that. But I guess my point is when you're out there involved, you don't have the time to be discouraged, really. If I feel like it's important to be out there. And I hope the listeners know about the People's Mobilization in New York this coming weekend. It's not even just the weekend. It's going to go from the 20th through the 27th. The climate strike is the 20th. And then Saturday is the rally for Puerto Rico. Then on the 21st, there's the race and militarism that's sponsored by the Black Alliance for Peace. And then on the 22nd, there's the People's Mobilization, and Roger Waters and Cornel West will be speaking, and Roger will be singing, of course. And then on Monday night, we're going to be at the Congregational Church, and the members of
I'm glad that you were able to give us some ideas about that, but I want you to deal with the question at hand. I really am a stickler for that. When an issue is in play, let's deal with the issue, and we could come back to your other announcements at another day. But today we're talking about this. This is a major, major issue.
Okay. Well, I kind of lost my train of thought there. I'm sorry. I guess
you were referencing the fact that it is to be understood that we don't have a handle yet on really what is going on because we don't have information. And the avenues of information are reporting in the same manner. They're taking us on these journeys that may or may not lead us to answers. But in any event, we have to address the question that even though the United States was not attacked directly, and even though the United States has a long-standing relationship with Saudi Arabia, when the President of the United States all but commits military personnel and military might to helping to defend an ally, and we have no other entity in the United States saying anything about that, or voting about it, or commenting about it, or calling the president to account for making statements that we are locked and ready for war. There is a procedure here about how you declare war. You don't just get up and say, well, we're ready for war, so watch out. Any day now, any minute now, we'll have war. What does that say?
Well, we break the law all the time. I'm learning a lot about this international laws and the fact that in fact, I was listening to one of your older commentaries back when Aretha Franklin died, and at the very end of that, you spoke about the Pope and him being not only the head of the Catholic Church but the head of a state, and you talked about sovereign states. Or sovereign countries, I believe you said it, because not only was he the head of the church, but the head of a sovereign nation. And I'm learning a lot about how we break these international laws, which is one of the reasons I'm looking forward to this coming weekend and discussing that, because see, that would be something that our Congress should do, not the president.
Exactly. Thanks. Great to hear from you, Julie. I'm glad to hear your voice again. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Yes. Good afternoon, Eutrice.
Hello.
What caught my interest was the first commentary you made about the union going on strike, and that's a pretty big story because most of the unions have been eliminated or neutered, and I guess the small fraction of industrial unions, like the auto workers, to have a strike like this is quite an event. What comes to my mind in this particular case is that this should be a message to all conscious workers that the divide and conquer technique of the ruling class that runs a capitalist system that we have here that's one of the most successful systems of capitalism that serves the interests of those who rule, you know, is at a very high point, and it's even getting better for them. And they have a lot to thank for the creation in the 17th century of the concept of total white supremacy. So this system of white supremacy is so effective in dividing the workers in this country that it's playing out now at a high degree and making those who rule even richer and richer. So as long as you can keep the workers divided, you are in the driver's seat. And,
well,
you know, and that's what
there
we
today,
have now.
David, what I want to do is to ask you to call back tomorrow and finish your point entirely because we've run out of time today. I'm very sorry about that. But these things happen. This is radio. So we'll continue our conversation tomorrow. Let's see what develops between now and then. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.